Welcome back to the Everything Bagel podcast. This is Shelby.
And this is Emily.
I feel like I said that so fast. Everything Bagel podcast.
This is Shelby. All right.
Welcome to our audiobook of A Court of Mist and Fury. Yes. We're just going to go through and read it all. I'm kidding.
Okay.
That was so such a pity laugh.
Well, I am not going to lie. I didn't really understand the joke.
Oh. I didn't perform very well.
I didn't understand what you were trying to say, so I just laughed because I felt awkward.
Okay. Well, you can cut that out then.
No, I think I'm going to leave it in because that's so funny. I'm going to leave that in there.
If it sounds I am unwell, it's because I have had a cold. So
she's getting over it. So
I'm getting over
ignore
it.
Ignore the stuffiness. But today we're going to be talking about Court of Mist and Fury, like Shelby said.
Yes. I said that joke because I literally we have so much we want to talk about. Yes.
We're going to speed through our notes, you guys, because we have so much to talk about.
This is probably our favorite book.
Yeah.
That we have read ever. In our new reading journey.
Yes.
And probably ever, honestly.
Maybe ever. Maybe my favorite book of all time.
Mm-hmm. So
we read this book back in 2023, but both of us have reread it recently and have taken notes on it. So these are kind of our notes on the reread, but
we'll try to add in some initial thoughts that we had. I mean, yeah.
If you haven't read this book, it is now your time to go bye-bye.
Yeah, leave.
Because and if you we haven't read this book, giving spoilers. What are you doing?
What are you doing with your life? Your life could be exponentially better if you read this book. And if you have only read the first book and not the second book, what are you doing?
Also, you have to finish the second book. I have to admit, the very beginning of this book is actually the worst.
Mm-hmm.
It is so hard. And I listened to the audiobook for my reread. I read the physical book the first time and then listened the second time, and it is so bad. Those first, 1 to 2 chapters with Tamlin and Feyre,
they're so bad.
Rough.
So
cringy. It's so cringe. It's so bad.
And it happens right off the bat.
Yeah, and you're like, barf, 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 barf. But the rest of the book, chef's kiss.
Yes.
No notes.
Oh my gosh, so good. Speaking of barfing, in the beginning of this book, Feyre is having dreams and puking while Tamlin is
just snoozing away.
Yeah, just getting a good night's rest, doesn't even care.
Dreaming about flowers and sunshine and I don't know what.
He's just he's absolutely the worst in the beginning of this book. And I know a lot of people have an issue with that. Like, he just had this 360 flip right away from book one to book two, but he had to in order for the progression of the rest of the books to happen.
And it's okay, I don't really care.
Also, sorry, I have a little cough drop in my mouth if you hear that. The memes of Tampon without a mask. We finally get to see him without a mask, and there are so many memes of, him having a tan line or having acne where the mask was. And I'm like, he's described, I did not think about that.
He's described as being really tan.
Mm-hmm.
So is he tan from being in the sun? Because if so, he's going to have the world's worst tan line where that mask was. And that's super embarrassing.
Yeah. Super embarrassing. Let's just keep going into it. Going into the book.
Let's talk about it.
The characters in the book that we get to see a little bit more of. Is Ianthe. However you say it. Ianthe.
The audiobook says Ianthe, I think.
Ianthe.
Ianthe.
She's
the worst.
She plans their wedding. At first, you're like, okay, is she being nice? Is she just a B word or what's happening with
this? I was going to say, can we swear in this episode?
Yeah.
Because I really just want to call her that Biatch Ianthe.
Yeah. Biatch Ianthe. Wow.
Anyways,
she's the worst, quite literally the worst.
Yeah. And during my reread, I'm like, I'm literally stupid because the first time I read through this, I low-key liked Ianthe because Feyre didn't have any other friends. Mm-hmm. But when you actually read the things she does, she's horrible. She just is trying to humiliate Feyre, basically. Yeah.
Like, she does not have Feyre's best interest at all.
And then we learn some things later in the book that are horrible.
About?
That Ianthe was, like, manipulating her and getting information out of her to later...
Yeah.
Like, kill her family. Basically. Yeah. Anyways, we could talk about that later.
Ugh. Just, yeah. I do not like that character. Didn't like her from the beginning. Thought I would like her. But she's not the best friend.
Yeah.
That we were looking for.
If you also hate Ianthe, just wait till book three. Because it's very satisfying.
Yeah. Yes. So, before we get into... a very, very good part of this book. There were a couple things that just irked me. And I know that they irked other people. Specifically this line from Tamlin. There's no such thing as a high lady. Hello?
Hello?
I mean, yes, maybe there's no such thing as a high lady, but he was like, because in this conversation, Feyre asks, like, are there high ladies? Like, that only makes sense if there's high lords. There should be high ladies, you know? And then he just straight up, there's no such thing as a high lady. And so by this point, you're just like, okay, why is she with him? When is she going to go to the night court? When is the bargain going to be put into place? Also, another part that made me mad is, why does Feyre have to give Tamlin time to adjust? She is the one that needs time to adjust. She has, like, a whole new place she's living, a whole new body, but keeps telling her, I just need time to adjust.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you don't, sir.
What a baby.
Yeah, seriously, what a pussy. Oh
my gosh. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about the wedding.
The wedding scene.
This part was so good. So good. Obviously, because Feyre is basically crying. Or she's just like, she wants to get out of there so bad, and she's begging Rhysand to come save her, or someone. I don't think she knows at this point that she is talking to Rhysand.
No, she's just talking to no one and just saying, help me, help me, help me. Yeah. 'Cause she's suddenly like, I can't do this. First of all, there's red rose petals everywhere, which she specifically asked Ianthe not to do because it triggers her from under the mountain.
Mm-hmm. Second of all, freaking Ianthe, you're the worst. The wedding dress is so ugly.
The ugliest wedding dress.
And then Rhysand swoops in to save her, and it's just the best thing ever. And is this when he says, hello, Feyre, darling?
Yes.
Oh, my
gosh. And he's like, I'm here to cash in on my bargain.
Uh-huh. Oh, that part was so good.
Great.
And Tamlin gets so mad. So mad. He's furious. Like, you can't do this now. And then as a reader, you're just like, oh, my gosh, please. I have been waiting for something like this. We needed this.
Yeah, because you do not want her to go through with the wedding either.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, Rhysand could have come and cashed in on the bargain months earlier.
Yeah.
But he waited until she was like, save me, save me, save me.
Yeah. Which, honestly, I kind of like that he did do that, but also not.
Like, it was on her terms, you know? Yeah.
We love that.
But I was thinking about how, when that happened, he was obviously doing Feyre a favor, but in reality, he was kind of doing Tamlin a favor, too. Because how so? I think Feyre would have gotten to the altar and rejected him, personally.
I think she's...
Well, but either that or, I don't know, I think she maybe could have had a runaway bride moment if she had kept going, because she was literally having a panic attack walking down the aisle, like, I can't do this, I can't do this.
Yeah.
So what if, what would have happened if Rhysand wouldn't have come and got her? Because then everybody is just blaming it on, oh, the evil High Lord of the Night Court, and nobody's blaming, you know, or questioning Feyre and Tamlin. And true. They can just work through their stuff in private. So I'm like, you know what? Rhysand kind of did him a favor there with, so that he didn't, like, publicly humiliate Tamlin.
But honestly, I don't think Feyre is strong enough to decline that. You think
she would have just gone through
with it? I think she would have just gone through with it. Totally.
She kind of sucks sometimes.
Yeah.
And I understand people that don't like Feyre. A lot of people don't like Feyre. I understand it. But it's about the development.
Yes.
It's about her growing a backbone throughout the series that I love about her.
And it makes her just a little bit more relatable because she is the way she is.
Right.
Do you have anything else about the wedding?
Nope.
So after that, we're kind of going like back and forth between Night Court back to Spring Court. And there's a funny moment where Feyre throws a shoe at Rhysand.
Love that part. Iconic.
Oh, so good.
There is a part in chapter 3, I don't know where we're at, but she accidentally goes into Lucien's head. And it's the first time she's ever done something like that, so it's pretty a monumental moment. And when she goes into his head, she says she feels endless sadness, guilt, and hopelessness.
Oh yeah.
Which is so sad. And I just have to say that Lucien is, like, the most mysterious character.
He's so underrated. Out of
the whole series, and he's so underrated. I would love a break-off book for Lucien, personally. Same.
A little novella.
Oh, I would love
just
that.
Just to, like, explain why he is the way he is.
He's so fascinating.
Because he has so much depth that we don't even step into.
Exactly.
And, like, there's just, like, so much there. And I forgot about that moment. That was something that I feel like I saw more on social media and didn't, like, catch while I was reading.
Yeah.
Same. But that is so sad. But that also shows, because Rhysand is teaching Feyre, like, shielding and reading, because she can't read, which is such a funny part in these books.
So funny.
But
I didn't know you could read. Those memes are so funny. When she comes back from the Night Court and Tamlin's like, I didn't know you could read.
Oh my gosh.
So good.
Freaking Tampon.
I was so excited the first time reading this. Like, okay, finally someone's teaching her.
I know. Tamlin just wants to lock her up. Frick. But
he just wants to make out 24/7.
In that moment with Lucien, we like actually do see that she is pretty powerful because she like wasn't trying to do that,
and you're like, oh snap, she's got powers.
Yeah. But what bugs me is I feel like we never get to see her full potential, and I hope later on in the series we do. I mean, we get to see a lot more, but I feel like the series steps into a lot of other characters and like their powers. And we don't ever get to see Feyre's full potential with her power.
Yeah, it bugs me still.
Because it's like, in this book, you get like the tip of the iceberg. Like, okay, she has a little bit of power from each High Lord. So like that together is a lot. Yeah. And it's like actually kind of hard for her to learn how to control it.
Right.
My next one is when she gets saved. What are your next notes?
When she gets saved?
Yeah. Like, Tam...
Oh, I had a note about the tithe.
Okay.
A few. So, this part is so frustrating because as much as you already hate Tamlin, this is, like, my final straw. You're like, I am done with him. He's actually the worst because he's doing the tithe and Feyre's sitting next to him and the water wraith comes up and is like, I'm sorry, I don't have the money to pay. Like, there's no fish in the pond. We have no money. We have nothing to eat. And she's like, please help us. And he's like, you have 3 days to get me the money. And Feyre's kind of like, hey, maybe, like, maybe don't make her pay. Like, they said they don't have anything.
And she gives her the piece of jewelry, right?
Right, or and the he's like, I don't care. So Feyre, and I love this part, she basically is like, screw it. And after this thing goes down, she walks off the dais and goes and finds that water wraith and gives her the jewelry off of her
neck. Because she's like, I don't need this.
And bracelets and earrings, whatever she has. And it makes me think that maybe, because Rhysand earlier said, you are no one's subject. It was like the first or the second time that he grabbed her or brought her to the Night Court. He said, you are no one's subject. And it kind of made me think maybe that planted a seed in her head when he said that. And in this moment, she's like, you know what? You're right. I'm not his subject. Like, I can do what I want. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do what I want. So she gives the wraith her jewelry, which there was a little tidbit in here that I noticed that I thought was interesting. She said that Ianthe had suggested she wear this gold jewelry instead of silver that she was going to wear, because the gold supposedly complimented her more. Kind of thought this was interesting because Feyre is already gravitating more towards silver, which is more so Night Court. But Ianthe was like, no, gold suits you better. So I kind of thought it was interesting. Like, maybe an Easter egg foreshadowing of she's always been drawn towards Night Court type things.
Yeah.
Which we know is true.
Yeah. I didn't catch that one, though. Yeah. Like, the silver and the gold. That's interesting. The next thing I want to talk about is when Tamlin basically traps Feyre inside.
Yep.
And she freaks out. This is another moment where she, like, has loads of power that she can't control. Mm-hmm. And then this is when, because she's basically, like, asking for help again. And this is when Morrigan comes to save Feyre.
Yes.
And I just remember, I don't think this is the first time she met Morrigan, but I just remember the first time that she met her, I was, like, so confused because Rhysand was saying that Morrigan is his sister, but she looks different. So,
well, no, they were saying they were cousins.
Oh, yes, not sister, cousin, sorry. Still, though, I imagined them to look the same. And so, like, pretty much this whole book, the first time I read it, I imagined Morrigan with dark hair. And then when I saw fan art of her, I was like, wait, she's a blonde? Like, yeah. That makes so much more sense with, like, her personality and, like, how she always wears red and stuff that she has blonde hair and not dark hair. Mm-hmm. And then you figure out that they're, like, not actually cousins, right?
Yeah, they're described as cousins. And then at one point, Rhysand is like, well, we are cousins, like, loosely. Mm-hmm. Like, not first cousins, but, you know, somewhere we are related distantly. It's kind of giving... Aelin and Rowan, when Maeve was like, you guys are cousins in a very loose sense.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they're actually related, maybe, like, distantly, but...
Yeah.
They're still... With everyone in the inner court, like, they're all family. So, mm-hmm. Rhysand considers everybody family. So, I think that's one reason why he calls her his cousin, but...
Yes.
I love it.
And then I think we both have this... As our next note, we get to see Velaris.
Oh my gosh, the best.
And Feyre says, where are you going? And Rhysand says, to Velaris, city of starlight.
Oh my gosh.
Iconic. This is
like one of the best parts. We get to see Velaris. And if you're not instantly in love with the city of Velaris, I don't know what to say to you.
I loved the way that Feyre described it. Mm-hmm. Because... she describes it from, like, a painter's point of view.
Right.
Because that's what she loves to do. So, like, imagine how an artist that paints would describe the city, and that's exactly how Feyre describes it. And she even talks about, like, how she just wants to paint it to remember. And Sarah J. Maas is so good at world building. Mm-hmm. These, like, specific... places, And you can just tell that, like, they're just so close to her heart as, like, a human being, you know, writing them down. And I, like, vividly saw Velaris. Like, before I even saw any fan art of it, like, I vividly saw it. And the image in my head is obviously better than any fan art, but I just love the way that Feyre describes it. And that's how, like, if you try to catch it, that's how she really describes most things, is from a painter's point of view. Yeah. And I think, like, writing-wise, like, that is just so cool. Because then further on in the series, you can see that there are different POVs. And it's almost like they're from different interests rather than, like, a painter. Right. And so that was done purposefully, and I thought it was great.
Yes, because somebody told me once that they didn't like the writing style because it was too descriptive, and I'm like, but that's the point. Like, it's in Feyre's point of view who notices all these details because she's thinking about painting, you know? So I love
it. And, like, you have to be so detail-oriented if you are that way, so it just makes so much sense. And then we meet the inner circle.
This part is so good, and even better during my re-listen to the book, because I'm just
knowing,
like,
all the characters.
They are just so instantly lovable, and it just was so heartwarming. I wanted to cry.
And they're just so different than, like, what you expect.
Yes.
Because what Tamlin and Lucien describe them as is, like, just ruthless, and they'll, like, kill you for anything, and they're only concerned about themselves, but, like, they're the complete opposite. And the humor that goes on with, like, Cassian and Rysand and Asriel and even Morgan and Amarin, like, it's just great. Like, there is no, like, book group of people that compares to the inner circle.
The inner circle is elite.
Yeah.
And it's so, you know, obvious off the bat. I love how they are written. It's just obvious that they are a family who loves each other.
And will die for each other.
Right. And they're just so funny and casual off the bat. And which is so different, because she expected everything to be so formal. Because that's how it was at the Spring Court. Like, every dinner was just so formal.
Yeah.
She's like, wow, this is kind of nice.
And immediately feels welcomed.
Yes.
Which is great, because that she did not feel that ever in the Spring Court.
Right.
And so she's, like, already starting to warm up to them a little bit more. And that's what Rysand wanted, you know?
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I don't think he, like, told the inner circle to be like that. Like, okay, we need her to like us.
No, they're just being themselves.
Yeah, which is, and, like, he just, what's, he wanted, so them great to be about themselves.
Love.
Oh my gosh. They're just, like, obsessed. Some of the best characters.
They really are.
In the inner circle, besides Rysand and Feyre, who's your favorite?
What? Oh my gosh. Besides Rysand and Feyre. If we're talking about this scene specifically, Cassian is so funny.
Mm-hmm. I think he's my favorite.
He's so funny. I love him.
Who's your least favorite?
Well, Asriel's kind of just quiet, so you just don't know anything about him yet.
Yeah.
But, and Amarin is just a little bit scary.
Yeah.
But you're intrigued by her.
I would say Amarin's probably my least favorite. But you are intrigued, because you don't really, like,
you're not supposed to love her at the beginning, I don't think.
Or ever.
No, because in the third book, like, especially towards the end, you're like, Amarin, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Love you.
True.
But it kind of takes a minute to warm up, which, you know.
But she is interesting. I still don't think I fully understand Amarin.
No, and I, like, don't think anybody does. Nobody really knows what she is.
Yeah, if she had a side book, it would be, like, one of those books that you read and you finish and you're like, wait, what just happened?
You're like, I still don't get
what
it.
What did I just read? Oh, okay. The next part is they go to visit the bone carver. Is that what you have next?
Yes, they go to the prison to see the bone carver to get answers and get about bringing Jurian back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And the bone carver gives them information telling them that they need to... The only way to bring Jurian back would be to use the cauldron, which now they're suspicious that the King of Hybern has a cauldron because they think he's going to try to bring Jurian back. The only way to nullify the cauldron is to get the three pieces of the book. And so Rice...
There's two pieces.
Two pieces? I thought it was three. Anyways, two or three. Rhysand's asking where to get the pieces of the book. And he tells them the summer court. And I thought this was interesting because before this scene, when they find out that they need to go get something from the summer court, a few chapters earlier, Feyre found Rhysand crafting a letter to Tarquin, High Lord of the Spring Court, asking if they could come visit. So Rhysand already had suspicions or already knew, but the bone carver does low-key address that. He's like, you already know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, so part of me was like, okay, then why did Rhysand and make Feyre come to this extremely dangerous place to get answers that he already knew? Like, maybe he just needed his suspicions, you know.
Yeah, to be confirmed.
To be confirmed, right. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Another thing that was interesting is later on, I think, we find out that Feyre saw the bone carver as a little boy mm-hmm. with dark hair and blue eyes. And so there's, like, theories about that, obviously, if you haven't read further on. That I think actually Feyre, like, theorizes, or maybe that's just something that went around the internet, but, like, that could be, like, a little boy that she encounters or that she has or something like that. But that's interesting because yeah. we find out that the bone carver isn't, he doesn't look the same yes. to everybody.
And we find out later that to Rhysand, he appeared as Jurian in that moment.
Yeah.
And to Feyre, it was a little boy. And it was really creepy as a little boy because he looked like a little boy, but the way he talked and his mannerism, she described as like something very old and evil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, there's actually some good like creatures in this series.
Yes.
Described very well.
Except for some of them, like the adder, what I still don't understand that creature.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody, can you tell me what that is?
I imagine that is like Smeagol
yeah.
type of thing.
Same. But like flying.
Yeah, with wings.
The next thing I want to talk about was going to the Weaver's Cottage. Did yes, you have something before that?
That was my next thing.
Rhysand is like, okay, we need to see if you can sense objects that were made or that you can basically find objects that we need you to find. So he's like, I'm going to send you on a little mission to test it out before we go to the Spring Court. And he's like, there, you need to go to this weaver's cottage and find a piece of jewelry there. Mm-hmm. And so before they go, first of all, this is the first time he kneels in front of her because he's helping her get into her like harness that he covers with knives and stuff so that she can protect yes. herself.
Oh
he's
my god.
Kneeling in front of her, helping her get it on.
Uh-huh.
Which becomes even more significant.
He says something
later.
There. What does he say? I don't remember.
She says, "So I'm your huntress and thief." And he says, "You are my salvation, Feyre."
Oh my gosh.
Internally screaming at that line. You're my salvation. Bye. Bye. I'm done.
Oh, at this point, you really are starting to like Rhysand.
Yes.
Like, if you don't love him already, you're like, okay, he's warming up to me. I think I like this one.
And then in chapter 20, he says, did you enjoy the sight of me kneeling before you? Which we find out is even more significant later because she asks what the tattoos on his knees mean, and he says it means I will kneel before no one
mm-hmm.
other than my crown.
Oh my gosh. Like, but he's already obsessed with her. He already knows. Screaming. Oh, I already want to reread this book again.
I can't even handle it. It's too much. It's so good. And when they, you know, throughout this book, Feyre and Rhysand just start flirting with each other and teasing each other. And it's really, she passes it off as a, you know, a distraction because they're doing really scary things. But though that dialogue between them is...
It's happening with the enchanted notes.
It's so good.
Like, there's one... I don't know if this is exactly what they say, but Feyre says, I want to paint you. And he goes, nude would be best.
Yep. Yep.
It's giving Titanic.
He's just such a tease.
I loved, he's such loved, a tease. Loved those notes that they were writing to each other. It's so yes, flirty. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, by this point, if you are in love with Rhysand,
yes, like, yes,
head over heels, as a reader, you're done. You're done for. You're like, Tamlin who? Tampon who?
Yeah, seriously. We went from like level 2 to level 100.
Yeah. Overnight. I liked Tamlin in the first book. I thought that they were going to end up, you know, being together forever.
I didn't like him. One thing, one moment that I thought was really special is when Rhysand takes Feyre into Velaris at night, and that was like a whole different vision of Velaris. And this is when Feyre puts together that Rhysand sent her the music under the mountain.
Oh, yes.
Because I think she's like listening to the music.
Yes, in Velaris, and she recognizes it.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Before we get, is your next note summer court?
Yes.
Before we go to the summer court, she starts training with Cassian, and I love this. Like, I love that he's just so willing to do anything.
The combat training, just an essential part of every single fantasy book series ever written.
And I'm like, I want Cassian to train me.
Dude, same.
Like, dang. Anyway, let's talk about the summer court. This part was so good. We meet Tarquin. We meet some other characters. There's so much jealousy and tension in these scenes.
Gosh. And it's so good because, you know, Feyre's finally realizing, dang, I think I like him because... Uh-huh. He's flirting with another girl, and I am jealous.
Yeah.
And it's so funny to me because they get there, and Rhysand tells her to flirt with Tarquin.
Yeah.
And then, so she does, and then he's jealous.
But he gets jealous.
And then she gets jealous.
But she's, like, low-key into Tarquin.
I'm low-key into Tarquin.
I know. Who isn't? Oh, my gosh.
When I first read this, I was like, wait. But I really like him. But then it's not the same as Rhysand still. But they also friend zone each other. They say multiple times, I think it'd be very easy to love you, even easier to be your friend. So yeah. They do say, like, I think I really like you, and I think we'd be best as, you know, friends. And these chapters are really heartbreaking because you know that they are there to steal. Uh-huh. And you know that it's going to end bad. And you are so sad because...
Tarquin is so nice.
You love the summer court. You love Tarquin. You want them to be allies and friends so bad. But in order to literally save the world, they have to betray him.
Yeah.
And it sucks so bad.
I know.
It's so hard. Anyways, keep going.
But... Tarquin is literally the best. Like, he's so considerate. He actually will listen. Doesn't he give her a necklace?
Yes, he does. He does gift her a very beautiful necklace. He takes her down into his, I don't know, they're like caves where he keeps all of that, his valuables.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah.
And he, like,
gives her a gift.
He actually wants to understand her. So... We have these two men, and you're like, oh my gosh, wait, is she actually going to choose Tarquin now? But you obviously don't want her to be with Tarquin. But, like, you want him to be with someone that's, like, significant in these books because he is such a good guy. And you do feel so bad for him for what they do.
I wonder if somebody has written a fan fiction about a why choose moment with Tarquin and Rusan.
Honestly, I kind of wished something would have happened, but like also not.
But also you are so in love with Rusan still that you don't want her to get with Tarquin. Anyways, I bet somebody's written that, but I don't usually read those types of things.
Yeah.
I bet it's out there. What else? Do you have anything else for Summer Court?
I don't have anything else for Summer Court. I have this random quote next. Mm-hmm. I don't know when this happened. I don't know why I have it here, but it's a good quote.
I think that's Starfall, so I think that's later.
Is it Starfall?
Maybe not. I don't know.
Because I have Starfall in a couple of notes. I'll just say it. Maybe it is Starfall. But Feyre says, to the people who look at the stars and wish. And Rysan responds with, to the stars who listen and the dreams that are answered. Oh, there's just so many good quotes.
The quotes from this book are to die for.
Like, freaking just take my heart right now. Yeah. And float away with it. Fly away with it, Rysan.
Yeah. It's like... You know, after I read this book the first time, I was like, holy moly, like, my life has changed. I'm not going to be the same ever. I'm obsessed. I've never been so obsessed with the book. But then, like, over the year that had passed since I read it, and I, you know, we learned that it's, okay, yes, this book is very popular. And yes, we're super basic for liking this book. And I started to gaslight myself into being like, okay, well, maybe it's not that good. Maybe... I don't love Rhysand that much because it was, you know, one of the first romantic-y books I've ever read. No, listen, on my reread, I was like, nope, I was not, listen, I fell in love with this book and the characters all over again.
Yes.
And.
Every time. I'm sure every time we read it, we will. It just, it literally changed us, you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times we can say this, but it altered our brain chemistry. And it did. It seriously did. Like, I am changed forever. We're probably so annoying right now.
We're so annoying.
Like, can you guys stop talking about how much you love this book?
If you, I don't know. I just don't understand. If you read this book and don't feel that way, I'll never know what that feels like.
I know.
I did it twice.
Like, honestly, I feel bad for you.
You must not have a heart or an imagination. No. I'm just, okay, I'm sorry.
That is horrible.
I didn't mean that. Guys,
everybody has their different interests, okay?
Yeah, but if this isn't your interest, you're wrong, so.
Yeah.
But also, you wouldn't be listening to this if you didn't like it.
True.
Okay.
True. let's talk about the end of chapter 38. We're not going to read it, but this is the Fallen Prince scene.
Oh, so there are certain parts throughout these books where Feyre sees something and she puts it into her head, like takes a mental picture and is like, I would paint this and this is what I would title it. So this one night she senses through the bond, Rhysand having a nightmare. So she runs to his room and saves him and wakes him up and is like, it's just a dream, it's just a dream. And this part, first of all, was so tender because I don't think Rhysand literally ever in his entire immortal life has had somebody that has been able to sense him and care for him and come and take care of him in the middle of the night when he's having a bad dream.
Yeah.
Which I thought is so tender. I love when this female main character takes care of the male main character for like the first time.
And he never, what was significant about it is he doesn't let anybody do that. And he let her do it. So he's like being vulnerable to her.
That is exactly what this scene is. It's just the most vulnerable we've ever seen Rhysand. So basically she goes and comforts him and then she's leaving his room. And she looks back and it's just this image of him kneeling on his bed, big window behind him, the stars are out, and he's just, his head is,
down.
Yeah, his head's down and he just is defeated. He's naked.
Yeah, he's nude.
And the whole time Feyre's like, I'm trying so hard not to look down right now. Anyways, but that's what's beautiful about it is like that's part of the vulnerability. Like it wasn't a sexual moment.
It was an intimate moment, but not a sexual moment.
So, and she just is like, I would call The Fallen Prince, and it's just the first moment where he's completely vulnerable.
Yeah.
And it's so tender. And spoiler alert, but I am still extremely angry at Sarah J. Maas, because later in the series, Feyre paints a bunch of things and she never paints it.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy about it.
She paints herself.
This is the only painting I care about.
I know, but we did like get the description, you know, so we don't need it necessarily again. She never even
paints it.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's better in her head, probably. She's probably not even that good.
Yeah, let's be honest. We're going to talk about that in a bit. What's next? They go to the court. Do you have anything else with the Fallen Prince?
No, the Court of Nightmares.
The Court of... Bro. Okay. I loved this part. The Court of Nightmares. Such a good part. The way that they...
It's so funny.
...dress up. The way that Rhysand, like, gets Feyre ready for it. Like, you just... You have to be warned. Like, we turn into different people. And she's like, I don't care. And she plays her role so well. She's wearing practically nothing.
It's so... This part is so funny to me. Oh, my gosh. Because Rhysand is like, Feyre, are you sure? Like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, I'm really nervous for you to see, like, what the part that I have to play when I'm down here. Like, it's not going to be easy. And she's like, no, I want to go. Tell me what I have to do, and yeah. I will do it. And then...
And she understood the assignment.
Yeah, and then she didn't understand. Even have to pretend.
No, oh, my gosh. Okay, first of all...
dying.
When the Bat Boys were walking in, was that a presence?
Oh my gosh.
Like, everybody turning their head.
I think Mor and Feyre go first.
Yeah.
And then Azrael and Cassian walk behind them.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Rhysand.
And it's just... He just lets his dark energy power, like, take up the entire room.
Yes.
Such a good...
And then he has Feyre sit on his lap. Hands were going everywhere. There was minimal clothing. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is happening
right now? It was very spicy.
It was the amount of tension that has been building up so far is like, oh, it was just so perfect.
So funny that... She's just, like, not even acting at this point.
I know.
She's like, this
she's
is
like,
so...
I need something to happen so bad.
She's like, wow, this is super difficult. So sad I came down here. Oh my gosh, I'm dead.
But I just love how you, like, really get to see Rhysand's authority and power in that moment, too. Because it's like, he does have to play this role. And when you have that type of placement in a court... Like, you have to be that way,
mm-hmm.
you know? And we got to see that, and Feyre loved it. Like, she is starting to love all sides of him.
Yes. And that is really significant, because we know that Rhysand has, this fear. And he doesn't think that he is deserving of somebody that loves every part of him. And he doesn't maybe think that it's possible, but we're starting to see that Feyre... is extremely accepting, and she's not scared of any of his sides.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. You're like, okay, well, they're meant to be together, obviously.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, they're the best couple. Seriously.
The best.
The next part, do you have anything else for that?
No, just Starfall.
Yeah, the next part is Starfall.
I'm...
Her dress.
I'm emo.
Oh my gosh.
I'm so emo over everything about this.
This is such a beautiful part. Like, what incredible writing. I'm, like, crying thinking about it.
No, I'm so emo over Starfall.
Like, I want to experience this so badly. And, like, the fan art of, like, the stars falling on their face and, like, the fact that we get the meaning of what the stars are and yeah. like that it's their ancestors, it's like, oh my gosh,
it's like souls. Well, the ancestors thing, I'm pretty sure that's a fan
is
theory.
That a theory? Oh,
but Rhysand describes it as their souls, and yeah. once a year they are like migrating or traveling to somewhere that we don't know where. So he just calls them souls. So the stars that are in the sky falling everywhere are souls.
Oh my gosh.
And they're sparkly and they hit them in the face and they start laughing and it's just.
And the blue sparkly dress is so pretty.
She literally looks like a star.
Yeah.
Like she looks like her dress is made out of starlight.
Yeah.
I'm dead. I'm absolutely dead. And then when you later in the next book or the next book after that, is it 3 or 4 that you find out where the dress came from? Bye.
Yeah.
Bye.
It's in the little one.
In the novella, you find out where the dress came from and you will sob.
Oh my gosh.
You will sob. Okay. Anyways.
Like you have to read that book just for that.
Yeah.
That's like the only part that's important in that book.
There's a few good scenes.
I loved it.
Don't skip the novella. It's small enough. Just read it.
Yeah.
There's a few really good scenes.
Quick read.
During the Starfall scene, I really felt like Feyre and Reese, they both like let go of their fears and decided like, hey, I deserve love and joy. And they finally just like let themselves go and just were like, I'm not going to get in my own way anymore. And that's when they just like danced all night and it was so tender. And also, I don't know, my theory is that this is when Rhysand really fell in love. Mm-hmm. If not earlier, this was like solidified it.
Yeah.
Which I think he might even admit later on. I don't remember.
And this is just such a good, you're living in the moment type of thing.
It's so happy. Like, this is the first time I think Feyre has been truly, truly happy in, like, forever. Ever.
Forever. No worries. She's in the right hands.
Ugh. It's so good.
I need a Starfall.
It's so good.
One thing that happens in this book that I just find interesting is when we hear Rhysand's side of the story with Tamlin and their families. So we heard kind of Tamlin's side. Oh, yeah. And then we hear Rhysand's side. And I thought it was interesting how he described that he instantly felt power of being a High Lord when his father died.
Oh, I missed that.
I think Tamlin felt the same way. Like, he knew that he was dead. He instantly felt the power, instantly knew his role. And I just thought that that was such, like, an interesting thing. The way that Sarah J. Maas describes power, I think, is so cool because it just totally makes sense, you know, and, like, how in Tog, how she explains how the power works and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to the inn.
The inn.
I want a distraction. What do you want? They're
out training and in the Illyrian camps. Or that area. I don't know what it's called. But they were out in the woods. And basically, he can't use his power because he's being tracked.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to get to this inn where there's only one room and one bed. Guys, it's so cliche.
I love
it. But the one bed trope, you're just like, freaking finally.
We're folding. It's happening.
It's so great. Oh, I love it. And
but he asks her, what do you want? And she says, I want a distraction. So you're kind of like, oh.
Which actually makes you so mad.
Yeah. Like, no, that we know that's not what you want. But, like, you're just, that's what you said. You're playing hard to get.
I'm like.
So I guess we'll have to do. Might as well
just slap him in the face, Feyre. Seriously. Like, you jerk. But she did say, I say that, but I think he could sense that it was a lie. So let's just hope that he could feel that she was too embarrassed to say anything else and forgives her for it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so good.
And then before we get to the chapter, there's just some moments where Feyre is just, she's leaning in to Rhysand a little bit more. So they get ambushed. Rhysand gets shot with 7 ash arrows. Feyre is taking them out, and she tells him about the dresser and the drawers.
Oh, yeah, to distract him.
Yeah, before Rhysand passes out, he says, I was looking for you, too. Oh!
Well, oh my gosh. Well, like, he explains that he, you know, was dreaming about her and essentially sent her this beautiful vision of the night sky. Mm-hmm. And that is what she painted on her dresser. And they're just like now figuring this out. And mm-hmm. oh my gosh, it's so tender. That was
such a good moment. But then Feyre is like, oh my gosh, like I need to save this man. I think I like him.
Yeah.
Maybe love him. And so she goes to catch the Suriel for information to see if the Suriel has some information for her.
The best character.
Oh my gosh.
Is the Suriel.
And the Suriel says, if you choose to speed your mate's healing, ... There's more before and after that. But she says, your mate's healing. And so Feyre is like, what did you say?
Hold up.
And then the Suriel is like, oh, sorry.
The Suriel goes, oh, he didn't tell you?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And so Feyre is like kind of pissed that she wasn't told about this.
She's very pissed.
So she asks Mor to take her somewhere else because she wants to be alone, and Morgan takes her to the cabin. Then this is when Feyre paints the whole cabin. And Morgan's like, I'll come back to check on you. Feyre doesn't want to talk to Rhysand for a minute, which I'm like, girl, get over yourself.
Yeah, she's being so annoying, actually.
Like, you just found the best man, and you're mad she's about like, that?
Oh, no, this man that I've fallen for, that's beautiful. We're mates. He's my mate. I'm so mad.
Like maybe girl, try to hear his side of the story of why he didn't tell you, you know?
Yeah. But she just needs time to process, so I'm like, okay, whatever.
She does. And then Morgan comes back to check up on her, and she goes, well, you've certainly been busy looking at the cabin.
She doesn't say, wow, it looks so good. She says, you've been busy.
So the funniest, like, idea that goes around the internet is that Feyre is actually a terrible painter, a terrible artist, and she just painted from, like, every single surface in the cabin of Rhysand's, like, beloved sacred cabin that they go to all the time.
It's just terrible. I love that theory. It cracks me up.
Oh my gosh.
But it also kind of ruins it too.
I know. Because I did not imagine it that way. But
no.
Seeing that after reading it, I was like, that is actually so hilarious. Funny. But I do believe she's a good painter because of the way she views things.
Also, it's like her one passion. So that would kind of suck if she sucked at painting. But it's funny to think about.
Oh,
but yeah, then we get chapter 54, which is the most iconic chapter to like ever exist in any literature ever.
Oh my gosh. And I heard about this chapter, like, going into this book.
Me too.
Like, just wait until chapter 54. Like, it's so good. It's the best chapter. And so I'm like, okay, it's for sure going to be a smut scene. Like, that's when it happens, you know? But boy, was I shocked when I read that chapter. It was so much more than what I was expecting and needing.
The greatest thing ever.
The greatest thing ever. So we basically find out, like, everything that's happened up to this point, Rhysand's point of view.
Yes. We get the whole story from his side.
We get the whole story. And it's just the greatest thing ever. And everything is clicking into place and making sense. We find out that a female has to make a male food to accept the bond. So this is when Feyre makes some soup.
She doesn't even make the soup. She reheats the soup from, like, the freezer or from a can.
Oh my gosh. But, like, we hear about his time with Amarantha and how heartbreaking that is.
So heartbreaking.
How he starts sending Feyre images. And we find out the true meaning from book one of when Rhysand says, there you are. I've been looking for you.
Oh my gosh. At Calamai. Oh. Because he literally meant that. Like, he knew that she was there. He keeps dreaming and having these visions of Feyre. And sees that she's at Calamai and convinces Amarantha to let him go. Mm-hmm. And literally, he's so, like, stunned when he runs into her that he just is like, oh, there you are. I've been looking for you. And, you know, he doesn't even mean to say that. Mm-hmm. But
he has. He's been looking for her for 500 years.
Okay, I'm done. I'm done for.
Oh, my gosh.
I can't even handle it. It's so good.
Oh, my gosh. We also find out he lets Feyre know that he took away Claire's pain. And that's one thing that was, like, kind of hurting Feyre.
Yes. That part is so good.
We find out.
That was, like, so traumatizing for her.
Yeah.
She blamed it on herself for giving that name.
Uh-huh.
But luckily, she did not die in pain.
No. We find out that Rysand was pissed that Tamlin used that one moment with Feyre under the mountain to get with her and not to help her escape.
Yeah.
Which we all were feeling that way.
Yes.
So thank you for validating that, Rysand.
Tampon. Stupid tampon.
And then he says, there's one quote where he says, he goes back to when he got her at the wedding. He goes, all I could see was you in your stupid wedding dress. So he hated that wedding dress as well.
We also find out that that moment at the end of book one where he's like goes wide-eyed and stumbles back and then just like winnows away really fast is the moment that the mate like the, he could really feel the mating bond click in, even though he was like had his suspicions before
in book one.
Yes, in book one, after she was made into a high fae, it suddenly became very, very strong, like the mating feeling, which only the male can feel it first before he tells her and she accepts the bond.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I love that too, because we find out so many of these things, like, are coming together and clicking into place. And so at that moment, he's realizes that they are mates and goes back to the Night Court and
cries to Morgan.
Cries to Mor that they're mates, and he's heartbroken because, and he's so scared and feels bad because he knows that she's in love with another High Lord, and there are like very serious laws in place.
Yeah.
So he basically is like, my mate is going to be with another High Lord forever, essentially. And so
he was willing to accept that.
Yes, for and her. He was like, oh, gonna be okay with that because really he just wanted her to be happy. And oh my gosh, it's so heartbreaking. So
one quote that I wrote down from Feyre, oh, such a good part. In this chapter, she says, I wonder if love was too weak of a word for what he felt, for what he had done for me, for what I felt for him. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
Like, that just explains their relationship perfectly, because love is too weak of a word for them.
Can't even.
But then she gives him the soup. He accepts.
Good soup.
Good soup. In the next chapter, that's when we get their painting, or there's paint everywhere. It's a spicy scene. The mating bond fully sets in.
Which I'm like, okay. I was kind of rolling my eyes, like, okay, we get it.
And
we get it.
Rysand, this is when Rysand tells Feyre the meaning of his mother's ring and that she had to win it.
And then she's, this part's so funny because she's kind of like, are you serious?
Yeah.
She's like, you made me earn my wedding ring?
Yeah. But she had to. It was like a part of it all.
Yeah.
It's initiation.
It's such a Feyre thing though, like, Of course she was going to succeed, and he knew it.
Yeah. But then the book does not end there. It gets very crazy after that.
Crazy ending.
So, the Inner Circle, is this when they go to nullify the cauldron or whatever? And we see, like everybody starts coming back in. There's Hybern, there's Jurian.
There is a moment where Tamlin and Lucien find Feyre out in like the woods something because of they sense the power anyways, and they're like, oh, finally we've been looking for you, like you need to come home. And she's like, yeah, no. She finds out, so this is chapter 65, we find out that Tamlin and Lucien have been working with Hybern, the enemy.
What?
They've been feeding them information, and this is when we find out that Ianthe sold out Feyre's sisters to the queens so that they could shove him in the cauldron. And I am pissed off.
You're like, when do we get to cut off this biatch's head?
Hated Ianthe.
What was the like, name you made for her? Biatchianthe.
Biatchianthe. Yeah, no. We and then you're just, as much as you hate her, you just hate her even more. And you're also like, what? I can't believe Tamlin and Lucien are working with the King of Hybern. So yeah. Now they're the enemy. Now they're truly, truly the enemy. She gets away and she goes with the Inner Circle to try to nullify.
I think that's what they're doing. They're trying to nullify the cauldron or something with the cauldron.
Yeah, and so then, she's putting the book together so they can nullify the cauldron.
This so is that, when everybody starts coming back into it. Like, yes. Hybern shows up. Durian's there. Lucien's there.
It's like Tamlin's a big family there. Reunion, but everybody hates each other and is trying to kill each other.
Uh-huh. And then they drag out Nesta in a lane, and she figures out all of that stuff. This is when the King of Hybern is like, you need to break your bond or whatever. So you're like, no, they can't break their bond.
Well, it's Feyre. So first they shove. Basically, they find out that it is a trap because Feyre is going to nullify the cauldron, and she shows up, and the King of Hybern is like, perfect timing, like, I've been waiting for you. So they're like, oh shoot, like, this was a setup, they knew that we were coming, this is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
The immortal queens want to become immortal, but they want to do a test run first on Feyre's sister. So they shove Elaine in the cauldron, she comes out as a fae. Mm-hmm. Then they shove Nesta in the cauldron.
But when Elaine comes out, Lucien says, she's my mate.
Yes.
You're my mate.
That is crazy. You're like, what? Lucien is like, crap, she's my mate.
Uh-huh. Which, like, can you shut your mouth for a second, Lucien?
Could you not have just kept that inside for, like, a little bit longer? Like, yeah. She's literally traumatized. First of all, they still kind of hate Faye. Not only did she just become the thing that she hates, but then finds out that she's supposed to be mated to one of them.
Yeah,
like Lucien, that not great timing there,
and
bud.
She's engaged to a human, right? So like her whole world just shattered.
She was human like 0.2 seconds ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then they shove Nesta in the cauldron.
Nesta comes out, but she brings something else with her. She took something from the cauldron. Yes.
Iconic moment when she points her finger classic at the King Nesta. Of Hybern.
She's like, you're not going to break
like,
me.
Yeah, she's like, if you are taking this from me, I am taking something from you.
But anyways, before all of that happens, Hybern destroys Cassian's wings.
This was so sad.
And he threatens to hurt Azriel too, you know. And, like, the mortal queens, did you already say that? The mortal queens show up, so, like, they're witnessing all of this.
Right. Because the mortal queens are working with Hybern.
Yeah. So, like, all of this just craziness is happening, and you're like, no, not Cassian's wings.
No,
like,
so
he's
sad.
One of the strongest Illyrian warriors, like, we need him. And then this is when, is it Feyre that says break the bond, or who?
Yes, so essentially Rhysand comes in and he's about to do something terrible, I don't know, to sacrifice himself, I don't know. We don't actually find out what it is, but Feyre is basically like, not on my watch. She's like, I have a better idea to whatever Rhysand is about to do here. And so she is like, all of a sudden she pretends to like wake up out of a stupor. So she basically pretends that Rhysand has been manipulating her mind this whole time, and she quote unquote wakes up and is like, Tamlin, is that you? Tamlin, mm-hmm. Save me. I want to go home. Tamlin.
Ew.
And so she's acting, and everyone's, like, really confused at first, but then, like, Moore and Rhys are starting to get it.
Yeah.
And they're catching on to this show that Feyre's putting on, and she tells the King of Hybern, like, break the bond, please, like, get me away from him, like, I want to go home, Tamlin. And so everybody that needs to be buying it is buying it, except the King of Hybern. It alludes to the fact that he knows she's faking it, but he does not sell her out. He's just like, okay, psycho, sure, I'll break the bond.
Yeah.
And so he breaks the bond, quote unquote,
but it's actually the bargain.
And you at first you're like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I love at this moment Moore catches on so fast.
Yeah.
She starts playing along with Reese. I don't remember what she says. I don't know. But she says something and you're like, heck yes, let's freaking go. They're understanding what's happening. Because Moore's like, how did she break it? How did she break the spell? Or something like yeah. that. You know, just pretending to go
or
along.
Wasn't it Amarin that asked? One of them.
It's Moore says something. I don't know. I don't remember. Feyre looks at Moore and essentially.
Oh, Amarin asks where Feyre is, but I think Morgan does kind of know more what's going on.
And Rhysand has, well, she can't communicate with Rhysand through their mental bond because the King of Hybern like basically nullified everyone's magic. But she's trying so hard. She's like banging on those mental shields that are up, like telling Rhysand like, just go along with it, just go along with it. Like, I love you. I don't know what she's telling him, but basically just saying go. Oh, she's telling him to get everyone out. She's like, she's like, get everyone to safety while I do this.
Yeah.
And it's never really clear whether her message got through or not, but everything went according to her plan. She goes back with Tamlin, and then we switch to Rhysand point of view.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And he's explaining everything to them, and they're like, what happened to the bond? Because they all felt like the King of Hybern break the bond, and Rhysand's like, well, he broke the bond, but not the mating bond.
Yeah.
He just broke that, you know, bargain that we had made under the mountain. So I'm like, thank heavens.
Because I was actually scared for a moment reading this initially.
So scary.
I was like, no, their bond can't be broken. Like, we went through all of this just for that to happen. But then Sarah J. Maas reassures us pretty quickly, which is good. Like, I'm glad that wasn't a cliffhanger.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Can you? I'd be so mad.
If this was a Rebecca Yarros book, that would have been the end of the book.
The end. Break the bond. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. The end. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah J. Maas.
Yeah.
But it still ends on a cliffhanger because you're like, oh my gosh, Feyre's with Tamlin. What's she going to do? Rhysand explains to the inner circle once they get back to the townhome. He's like, look, she said that she's going to take them down from the inside. So because they're like, oh my gosh, Rhysand, what are you doing? Like, she's your mate, go get her. And he's like, no. And they're like, I'm sorry. He's like, no, I'm not gonna go get her right now. Like,
we have she
is going to take him down from the inside out.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm gonna let her do her thing. The level of trust he has is unmatched.
I love it.
And also in chapter 68, and this might be after they're like, she's your mate. He says, she is my mate and my spy. She is the High Lady of the Night Court.
Oh my gosh.
Screaming.
So good.
He drops the bomb. He didn't tell anybody that they like officially got whatever, married. I don't know what you call it.
And screw you, Tampon, for saying there's no such thing as a high lady, because Feyre, darling, is High Lady of the Night Court.
And now she's undercover as a spy in the Spring Court, and it's just sets you up for the best. Like, I love the beginning of book 3 when
yeah.
she's undercover. Oh, it's so good. Excited because it's so good.
Ooh, oh my gosh. Like, that ending was crazy, but so freaking satisfying. Her yes. becoming High Lady of the Night Court was everything. I am a little bit upset that we didn't really get to see that as a reader.
I know.
But it's okay, because it was such a good surprise at the end. But, like, I would love to have, like, a little extra chapter where we get to, like, see all of that play out.
I know.
How it happened, the intimacy of it, but, yeah.
It's so good.
Oh my gosh, such a good book. I need to go read it again.
So, yeah. Anyways, that's it. We've been wanting to do this episode for ever since we started the podcast.
This is the reason why we started the podcast.
No, honestly.
Literally.
For real.
Oh my gosh, so good. We hope you guys enjoyed this book and this episode as much as we did. That was really fun. Let us know your thoughts, and if there was anything that we didn't talk about that you have thoughts about, because obviously we love talking about it. And we want to just hear everything. We want to hear theories that you have, if you've read the whole series. Just please.
And if you have read this book and you haven't seen a million memes, let us know. We have about 50 really good ones to send you.
Yeah, probably more than that, too.
So many. The literally so many. They're all saved on our Instagram, so let us know. We'll send them to you.
Yeah, if you they're want so good. A load of memes to look at, we got you.
Memes and fan art.
Uh-huh. Oh, the fan art. The Feyre High Lady of the Night Court fan art is the best.
Oh, it's so good. It's
oh, my
so good.
Gosh. She's so hot. Anyway.
Anyways, that's all. We got to wrap this up.
Give us a follow on Instagram and TikTok at EB, as in bagel. .pod and give us a rating and review, please. Tell your friends and family about
like
and us.
Subscribe.
We're not on YouTube. Well, we'll probably add this, but without a video.
Yes, it will be on YouTube eventually.
And that's it.
Okay, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Well, just what I wanted to say is that I did not expect my re-listen of this book to hit me so hard, to make me so emotional, like I was reading it for the first time again. But I wanted to go back to the Marco Polo I sent Shelby immediately after finishing. Like I said, I don't know if I'm gonna leave this in here or not, but I'll decide later.
I just finished listening to Mist and Fury again, and I'm literally unwell because I finished it and then I went to our ACOTAR playlist and started listening to the songs on there, and I'm not okay. Like, I'm not okay at all. It's because I'm pregnant, right? Like, I'm not crazy. It's because I'm pregnant, probably. No, actually, I need therapy because of this book. And, what was I saying? I just did not expect my reread. Like, I already knew it was going to happen. I did not expect, like, the reread to hit me so hard. I'm unwell. This is embarrassing.
That's so funny.
There you have it. Okay, we're crazy. We need help mentally. Okay.
Like for our playlist.